Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight for this review of the news and of the Andrew Tate interview. I will not review it in full, of course. It's a 4-hour, 30 minutes interview, something like this. But I watched it all today, and there are some interesting things. Andrew Tate tends to exaggerate everything he talks about. But I think he has the right solutions for society. He comes at it from a very different perspective than me, though. I learned a lot in this interview about how he got brought up around discipline and having an over-disciplining father. It's one way to reach excellence. In my view, it shouldn't be the only way that society works, you know, this kind of code of honor type of dad, this kind of highly restrictive dad who almost induces pain in you for the pleasure of it or to shape your experience. Those are not things that I do. I've been raised in a very loose family, libertarian thinking, and that is also how I create my own families. But of course, it leads to a different kind of mind. You can see Andrew Tate has been pursuing wealth, has been pursuing success extremely aggressively, and he's aggressive in everything he does. That is not the level at which I'm interested at. I'm not interested at getting this from the world, having 10 Ferraris or whatever. Those are not things that I value, things that I pursue, but clearly, he's been basically a little bit like Michael Jackson, was basically made into someone through a kind of abusive fatherhood. I'm using the word abusive loosely here. Not that I care, not that I think it shouldn't exist, but kind of an aggressive fatherly control over one's life has led Michael Jackson to become a very good dancer. And may have motivated Andrew Tate to become proficient and in various things, including kickboxing and eventually making money. And then his whole story of imprisonment, which I think he makes a convincing case for. He makes a convincing case in this interview that it was truly an attack of the Matrix because they took issue with him. He does make a case that there are no serious charges coming. And when I first reviewed this, when he presented himself as a victim back in the days, I had said, he doesn't seem that important to me in terms of a kind of culture of resistance against the system for him to be solely attacked by the Matrix. So I was concluding back then, perhaps they will find some crime. It's very hard to get as rich as he got and get all these cars and these big buildings that he has. It's very hard without having committed some kind of fraud, some kind of tax evasion of some sort. And so I was tending toward the interpretation that they might find something bad about him that he's done. You know, it's super hard not to commit a crime if you have millions of dollars. It's super hard because everything is potentially a crime in terms in the domain of tax evasion and that kind of stuff. But now that we're many months after the events, the arrest, and that no charges have been coming, and he's still standing there saying, "See, no charges have been coming." Well, it does seem like it was nothing else than, "Please arrest this guy. He's being problematic. Find everything you can about this guy." It does look like it. And so I'm much more lenient today to conclude that, yes, he seemed to have been attacked by the Matrix by any standard that you can look at it. I've had great success with my Twitter clips. Absolute great success. I said on Twitter yesterday, it had been years since none of my videos would make more than a few thousand views due to shadow banning, self-censorship, and having to publish on alt platforms just 12 hours in and 28K impressions on this video, Elon Musk's video Twitter should be of interest to all creators. We will be growing again, boys. That is interesting because I've been standing in the dark here on Odyssey with a small crowd of you guys for many years now. I mean, I don't know how long has it been on Odyssey itself, maybe a year and a half. But then I was also on a small channel on YouTube before that. And now the video is at 55K impressions. Of course, impressions on Twitter are basically approximately double the amount of views of the actual video. So it's more like 25K, but still 25K is very good to have. It's much above anything else that we've been doing in the last few years. So I'm super happy about this because the whole clipping ID works. The whole Elon Musk mode of his view about video Twitter, I can rise on this and I can exploit this to bring more audience. So very happy about this. I will continue making clips and I will continue pressing on my buttons here when I want to slice a part of the show for the clip. Chris Unit, very bad take here. Said it before, but it's time to refresh my hottest take. Inheritance tax should be 100%. America's obsession with generational wealth is weird and exacerbates economic inequality. Your kids should work hard for their money like everybody else. Now, that is a very bad system because it's a system in which you're not anyhow advantaged at pursuing wealth above a certain ceiling. So if you're telling me that all the money I do after $1 million, I cannot give it to my kids, then I don't want to get any more than $1 million. And now we end up with the problem of we're destroying meritocracy. Now, what needs to happen around inheritance tax is that the leftists have to stop thinking in terms of individual meritocracy. We are not in an individual meritocratic system. That is not a desirable system. We have to be in a genetic meritocracy. That is, the money I make rewards me. The money I make helps me make more babies, and the money I make eventually above a certain amount can be given to these babies so that they make more babies. That is the absolute arrimation. I know it's not a word in English, but the absolute union between nature and the economic meritocracy. If you destroy this, you mess up the system and you end up having all sorts of skewed, bad influences on people's behavior and incentives. One example being, oh, well, I made it to $1 million. $1 million is all I need in my life. Anything above this, they will tax it from me. Therefore, I don't want to make any more than $1 million. Blanket says, Jeff, did you hear about the SEC is now going after Coinbase now? I've seen, and did I not talk about something like this? Or is that something really new from today that you're talking to me about? Coinbase, SEC. Yeah, that was 6 days ago. I covered it. I covered it on the show back then, but it was 6 days ago. And I've said what I had to say, which is, well, they're going after the whole crypto world. Coinbase will probably survive this. It seems to be very restrained. It seems to be, I think it's almost, they're going after Coinbase to really go after these crypto like Solana, to define them as security, to create legal precedent that they are securities. I don't think it's that much against Coinbase. They have side interest in this. They want to make it super hard for complex cryptos to develop. They want to make it so that only Bitcoin, basically, at this point, is not a security. And then they want to come out with their own CBDCs. And, oh, Don't you want the easy CBDCs? At least you're sure it's legal. They are annihilating the competition and then coming up with their own replacement. That's what they always do, by the way. Censorship, YouTube. It's always a fucking cartel that takes what's there, kicks them out, brings in the new one. And of course, the new one ends up being submitted to the interest of, well, since we're in an Andrew Tate show, let's call it what he calls them, the Matrix. There is, by the way, at the end of this interview, I don't know if it's a reference to the JQ, but it's as close as I've seen Andrew Tate, reference it. He was talking about Hollywood at the end of at the end of the interview, and he was saying how pathetic it is, to be powerful in Hollywood, and how if I remove this from your CV, you're probably not a very interesting individual. You know, you just happen to have power in Hollywood. And then he said, who knows how you got that power? Wink, wink. I think it may have been a reference to the JQ and the influence of certain ethnic networks in Hollywood. But, you know, with Andrew Tate, it's always the most mainstream expression of the red-pilled view. So that is what I take issue with. Andrew Tate is kind of becoming the CNN of the red pill philosophy. And in a way, he's always... I know why he does this. He wants to communicate to broad audiences. And that we need this. This has to happen. It's very good that he does this. But to some extent, he does it so much that people are not given all of the tools to understand what we're talking about. The Matrix being one example. The Matrix, I like it. I love the concept. I love the educational attempt here. It's for people who would be hostile if you said the Jews, for example. Maybe the Matrix will get them in. Maybe the Matrix, they will understand there is some system out there of globalism, of NATO interest, and this system is working against us. I like it. It's an educational, it's an olive branch that is sent to weaker minds in a way. And there is a point at which trying to educate too much separates you from the truth. And I hope that he doesn't reach that point. Though I'm super satisfied with his performance in this interview. I think it's a whole interview. You can watch 4 or 5 hours. You're going to enjoy it. Daniel Penny disputes that he held Jordan Neely in a chokehold for 15 minutes on NYC subway. Penny has been charged with manslaughter in the incident on a northbound F train in New York City that was captured on video. Daniel Penny, the veteran charged with manslaughter, blah, blah, blah. Denies that disputed an eyewitness account that he held for 15 minutes. He defended his actions in the 4 clips shared Sunday. The May 1st interaction was partially captured on cell phone video, and Penny was seen on the ground holding Neely. Neely was homeless and a known subway busker who often performed as Michael Jackson. Neely was unconscious when officers arrived. The city's medical examiner officer said Neely died from compression of neck chokehold and declared the manner as a homicide. In his statement, Penny reiterated prior remarks that he did not intend to choke Neely and was attempting to restrain him. He also disputed the account of Juan Alberto Vasquez, who recorded the video and has said that Penny held Neely in a chokehold position for about 15 minutes. Well, I had analyzed the video that's available. Of course, the video certainly doesn't show 15 minutes. So we have we have a part of the story that we don't fully get yet. Even when I take the amended video that people sent me, which purports to show more of the interaction, still, I don't get to know exactly how long was an effective chokehold applied total, because it's always cut. Blanket says, Jeff are now calling Neely George Kirby 2.0. I think you're trying to make a reference to George Floyd, but I don't understand. Kirby 2.0, I don't understand what you're saying. Breaking, well, this was breaking like yesterday, but Soros has ended. Oh my God, look at his eyes. Oh my God, this is a new generation of trouble for society. May this huge amount of wealth that George Soros is giving to his child, his son, may this dilute as quickly as possible, because nothing but suffering can emerge from this crazy project that George Soros is now transferring to his son to wreck American society. Soros to hand over his $25 billion fortune to his son. 37-year-old Alex Soros. Alex has stated that he is more political compared to his father, though he shares many of his father's liberal views, including his positions on abortion, voting, and gender equity. Furthermore, Alex expressed his financial commitment against Trump returning to office for a second time. As much as I would love to get money out of politics, as long as the other side is doing it, we will have to do it too. You don't want money out of politics. You want your money to serve your project of subversion of American society, and that is a very bad thing. T.S. Apostolos says, shall we tax his inheritance, Jeff? I mean, we could save so much wreckage of American society by doing it. That at some point, I'm against in principle, I'm against a tax of inheritance. But at some point, you might make a pragmatic case that this particular inheritance is going to fund all these leftist talking points on mainstream TV and then the mainstream attempt at penetrating the internet. It's going to launch people onto careers that they're not really good at, but they're still going to get paid because the Soros Foundation wants you to say this crap on TV. There's so much deception and so much loss of time here that one wonders if it wouldn't be better for everyone to just make this money disappear. Blanket says, Jeff, this is what I was talking about when Pelosi called George Floyd George Kirby. Okay, well, you are using out there references that even I didn't know about this. But I will not look at the link you sent me because I have much other things to discuss today. I made an interview with David Nino Rodriguez, 266,000 subscribers on YouTube. It's a good interview. The dark side of AI, the dark side of artificial intelligence. So if you want to go watch it, it came out yesterday as a premiere. And so there were people watching it live. It was great. There was more than 1,100 viewers live. That was great. And I just lay out the revolutionary phenotype and the particular danger of reproductive AI. Puzim says, strange crowd at this Rodriguez stream. Nice show, though. Yeah, it is fascinating because I look at the comments. That's one of the very disappointing things. Like, he has a bunch of fans who are hating on me because I'm an atheist. I'm not taking offense. I really don't care. I've never wanted this interview to be about atheism. But they're like, here's one soul that we have lost. He's totally lost. It doesn't make sense. He talks about evolution. Evolution isn't even true. It's flat earth that is true. And it's like, okay, well, if you're if you're at the level of is flat earth true or false, and you tend to believe that it's true, perhaps talks of evolution the way I do will not be appealing to you. I can understand. But it's really too bad, because it doesn't matter whether there's a God, whether even the earth is flat or not. You should be interested at the main subject of my interest, which is the revolutionary phenotype, the danger of a living AI, of an AI that wants to, and that is in a position to outcompete us evolutionarily. Whether you believe even in evolution or not, that should be among your concerns in the face of the fact that an AI could exist that has these characteristics. But anyways, I really love the David Nino Rodriguez. It's really too bad that his crowd is so closed that it's the only thing that can cross their mind. Oh, he doesn't believe in Jesus Christ. I'm not listening. Blanket says, JF, did he really say that about the earth, and he's calling you dumb? No, not he. Not David. David was super great in the interview. But some people in the comment section are I don't know why they are like these MAGA super Christians, and it's like I don't even disrespect Christian. I highly respect Christians. I'm all with you guys. I want a society formed by Christians. I just don't believe in God. That is all. All right, so Andrew Tate has given an interview to BPD podcast, Patrick Bet David. It is an excellent interview. It's an excellent interview that is very chill, where we get to learn a lot that we wouldn't get out of Andrew Tate in other circumstances, when people are trying too hard to go at him, to attack him, when the mainstream media is just trying to paint him in some bad way. We really don't get the thoughts of the guy, and I highly appreciated this 4-hour, 30-minute interview where we get a lot of the story behind Andrew Tate. And I realized that there is this other part of humanity that is totally different from me, that experiences good parental behavior in a totally different manner. That is, there are multiple ways of being a good parent, and that's what I retain from this interview. Because Andrew Tate tells the story of how his father basically was imposing on him arbitrary constraints. He gives the example, for example, of having a headache and saying, hey, can I get an aspirin or something? And his father saying, no, you don't get an aspirin. You have a headache. Endure the pain. It's just, you're totally fine. You don't need any medication. There's no reason why I would neutralize this pain inside of you. Just take it in and it will make you better. So this kind of overly punishing father, it's not going to change much in your life, whether you've experienced that pain or whether you can relieve yourself from that pain for a couple of hours. You can probably be a little more productive at whatever you are doing right now if you don't have the headache. So this kind of father who has imposed on Andrew Tate extreme exigency throughout his childhood seems to be what has led Andrew Tate to become so driven and to seek success in various fields of realizations, kickboxing, influencer on social media, money, and all that. So what I discover, because I've not had a father like this at all, I've had a very liberal father, not liberal in the sense of leftism, but liberal in the sense of laissez-faire, of libertarianism, of I can do whatever I want. And it led me to have a motivation which I would consider at the same level of Andrew Tate, but in a specific domain of realization, which is intellectual realization. My pursuit of theoretical advances in biology and math, and my pursuit of somehow a small career in media. I think that that's two different paths that you can set a child on. Personally, I will reproduce the same strategy as my father. I don't want to go around the child and control every single behavior of them. I would rather they develop the motivation on their own. I would rather not use shame very much. I see that Andrew Tate has been shamed a lot. It's all about shame and honor. So his father would say, you have the name Andrew Tate, you carry this around, you must act in line with the honor of your family, the honor around your name. That to me is a little too much. It's too much involvement, too much micromanagement. But it has certainly led to good outcomes in the case of Andrew Tate. So I don't deny that different strategies can be useful. Perhaps, in fact, the strategy of Andrew Tate's raising may be more fit to more people on this earth. It's not fit for a brain of high creativity like mine and high intelligence. I don't need those little slaps and those little, strict interventions from everyone. In fact, I'm better left on my own. But perhaps most people that are of lower intelligence, lower creativity, that might actually be a good path for society to get. I want to bring your attention to three different segments that I found the most revealing. Let's start with this one around the solutions for society. So Andrew Tate talks about his imprisonment. Basically, he has spent with his brother in jail a couple of months, and now he's liberated. There were no charges, so he was under the uncertainty of how much time he would stay there, how much time they would keep him. He considers that this is an attack of the Matrix, that he's basically being punished, and they're trying to punish him for having ideas that the system finds problematic and that there was no basis to the charges. And given that the charges have still remained, well, that the claims, that the witnesses have still remained these two women who say, well, he was controlling 10 years ago, and well, he choked me 8 years ago. That is super not serious. I give the value to this of zero in terms of credibility, because we've seen it pulled on Julian Assange. We've seen it pulled on extremely small personalities, and it's always how it ends up. Some woman is on a quest of vengeance. She makes up those stories. There's the anonymity of it, and the media take it, and they fluff it into a hit piece against you. So I'm trending toward believing that Andrew Tate has committed no wrong that they can prove. And so that's a large part of the interview talks about his nervousness in jail, but how being with his brother helped. And then the problem of society that he perceives is around promiscuity, the abandonment of honor, the abandonment of restrictions. And he comments on this, on the potential solution part here.
And that's one of the reasons I'm kind of glad that God put me in jail, because if you look at anything that builds a man into a man, there's a degree of suffering. It's very hard to become a man and have a man who's respected and has stories and is capable when he only had a nice life and nice experiences. It's usually the things that made you the best version of you are usually the worst things that happened to you. So the demons I carry from jail, the fact that I can't sleep, I've had girls say to me, you can't sleep, you need to see a psychiatrist.
Blanket says, Jeff, there's videos of him saying he did terrible things to women. Aquanaut says, correct, he used to beat the shit out of women. Well, the problem is correction within the couple is sometimes consented to, and I don't consider it a physical assault in all instances. The problem being that some sort of corrective action sometimes is needed because there are really fucking psychotic and psychiatric women out there. The thing is, sometimes you need to defend yourself. So I'm not going to judge based on these criteria. I don't claim that everything Tate has done in his life is super moral. I don't like the cam business. I think it's a very sick business for the dating world, for men, for young men. So I think he has engaged into destructive things. But there's a difference between something being societally destructive and something being criminal that he would have committed recently that the Romanian authorities could know about and would have a good reason to hold him in jail for. Those are two worlds apart, and, you know, personal conflict within a couple, what are you going to do? The problem is we are in a species of fucking apes that have corrected each other and that had to correct each other or else the whole world would fall. I mean, if there wasn't some sort of corrective action, the problem is that the modern world is trying to make the case that any sort of corrective action between a husband and a wife is abuse, even like depriving of the credit card, even just refusing to buy the next whatever she wants. That is a form of economic isolation that the feminists will tell you. I take a major issue with the idea that corrective actions and punishment is trying to be removed from us. Because, unfortunately, just people are really fucking stupid. And if there's no fear of potential punishment, if there's no consequences for one's action, and if your husband cannot even remove the credit card from you because then that's abuse, or cannot apply some sort of corrective action, then forget about good relationships. They won't exist anymore.
And I said, absolutely not. I would be furious if a psychiatrist walked in here and took my demons from me. I don't care if they could fix me with a click. They're mine. And they were bestowed to me by God. And they are mine to deal with and they are mine to fix because that's how I become a better version of me. I would be furious if someone took them away from me. I'm glad I can't sleep. Good, I can train endlessly. That's why I'm bigger than I've ever been. I'm not going to waste a minute. But all the demons that have been given to me by God and all the problems that have been given to me by God are mine to fix. I would never, ever allow anybody else to take them from me. I'd be furious.
So a very anti-system, and that is very good. Very good, an anti-system positioning on psychology. Because psychology, if psychology was a pill on the market, it would have been judged as not tested sufficiently for mass consumption. Like, the FDA would not approve psychological therapy as a valid form of therapy because it's not been double-blind tested. Who knows what a double-blind study could really find? Most of these techniques are just things that are discussed by women in universities and psychology departments.
If a psychologist came in and said I could cure you, I'd say, no, thank you. I will cure myself. I don't care if it takes 10 years. I'll cure myself.
All right. So an appeal to the self as being the center of control over one's life. Now,
I have. And it used to be like that in the olden days. That's why no one did this dumb shit. They were just too embarrassed to even do it. And this is why you're saying, how do we fix it?
So here he's talking about mass shooters and saying, if we had a society based around honor, you would have young boys say, I don't want to make a mass shooting because I would be shaming my father. Now, it's a very constrained way to see the problem of violence around basically what he's saying is that people have to be afraid. They have to be afraid of shaming their family if you don't want mass shootings. It's a view, and perhaps most of humanity needs this kind of shaming, this kind of hey, you're my son and act honorably, that kind of stuff. I don't need this in my life because I'm from a very pacific line of people who don't need this kind of micromanagement at the parental level. But perhaps most of humanity needs this.
It's the country. Absolutely all of it comes down to the fact that, especially with men, none of them are bestowed with the things that the masculine essence needs to be a good man. You need pride, you need honor, you need a healthy level of ego, you need all of these things. We're taking it all from boys, and what are we giving?
That is absolutely correct. Proper reading. We are demasculinizing the cognitive landscape of culture. And we're doing it through the public school, elementary school teachers who are all female. We're doing this in the field of psychology, which is all female. And very soon, the field of medicine will be taken over by females. So we are totally stripping the males from positions of power and influencing the children. And we are growing a society that is in the maze of female cognition, just stuck in it.
Giving them instead video games, porn, weed. And what do you expect of these people? What do you expect of these shit versions of men besides trash output? You're going to get garbage all across the spectrum. Either they're going to do nothing or they're going to do something bad. They're certainly not going to do anything good when they don't try for anything in their lives. How are they going to do something good? The scary thing about all of this is that there still are two teams in the world. And there is a side of the world where they don't accept this crap. How long is America going to compete globally when you have countries like China and Russia and these other countries where they don't do this? I don't know if you saw, and they did.
Very interesting here, because I think that the anti-reproductive propaganda and anti-male propaganda is the beginning of the fall of American civilization. And so he's right. If you continue this over a couple of generations, not even over a generation, if we continue this over the next 30 years, what is America going to look like at the outset, with no drive, no motivation, no creativity, no ego, and yet other parts of the world where the same psychological structure as 100 years ago are maintained?
Did that survey to kids of what they want to be when they grow up. Did you ever see that? Yeah. It was crazy. Every American kid wanted to be a YouTuber. Every Chinese kid wanted to be an engineer or an astronaut. Yeah. Who owns the future? Who owns the future? We're in so much trouble. We're in so much trouble as a society. And what are we arguing over? It's insane. And what do they show you on TikTok?
Very, very astute take on the solutions. The problems here of society. And eventually they converge toward the solutions.
The parents all agree. When you're a clan, you're far more difficult to attack and assault. So
he's making a case for clan living. That is, families living together a little bit in the Muslim style of life, with perhaps grandparents living in the same house or the house just beside, the brothers living together. It's a very immigrant mentality. Personally, I like the family unit, but it's not bad. It's good. I don't know that it fixes the world, because I think you can have clans that turn bad. I can imagine, you know, try to enact the clan mentality in Detroit with a bad demographics outlook. I don't know that you solve the problem of violence with this. Now, John Drake says clans work. James says he is high energy. Damn. Yeah, that you can certainly give it to Andrew Tate. This whole 4 hours, he speaks as loud and as confident as he does in these few minutes that I've shown.
I would say the first thing I would do if I was a parent of normal income, I would try and find other parents who agree with me, and try and find other people who are ideologically sound, and I'd make sure that our children are friends and they spend.
See, that's where it starts. It's the demographics. The key, and he won't say it in those words, but if you find parents who are ideologically sound, you will have filtered the demographics already. You will have been attracted toward people who are more like you. And so that is a very good counsel, but I like to say it even more clearly. We are talking about a demographics problem, and we need to flee society and regroup with people who think like us and who are like us.
Spend the most time with each other, and I would try for us all to go on holidays together. And I would also put in conscious effort to try and deprogram. I don't think many parents say to their kids, "What did you learn today?" I'd be doing that not to check on the kid. I'd be doing the check on the school.
But let me challenge you. What's going on? Sure. So let's role play. Go ahead. Ask me the question.
What did you learn at school today?
So today we learned that, you know, Dylan Mulvaney had the courage to stand up for her beliefs, and she's a hero because she's out there and she's helping a lot of other people that are going through challenging times be able to stand up for themselves.
Okay.
What are you going to tell me?
I would say, why do you think they want you to believe that?
What do you mean that?
Why do you think they want you to believe that? They've told you something.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's true. What they've done is lie to you. Why do they want you to believe that?
Perfect. So say you now convince me I'm your son. Yeah. Great. I go to school tomorrow.
Now, Andrew Tate here suggests that we should teach children to be deprogrammed, to be resistant to what they learn. I think it's correct. I think definitely you want to instill a resistance to the mainstream discourse in your children. But I think it's also too hopeful that you can undo the propaganda of an 8 hours a week, 8 hours a day session of propaganda. Eventually, your child, if you send them to public school, this will become their world. And it will become the way in which they are socially rewarded and not socially rewarded. So yes, you can give them a kind of rational outlook on the world and equip them with defenses, cognitive defenses. But to a point, you won't be able to combat 8 hours a day of propaganda. Because they'll go back to school the next day, they'll talk about what they talked with their father, and they're going to get socially punished then. They're going to get told by the teacher that they're wrong. They're going to be hated by the LGBT club of their class. And so I find the dismissal of Andrew Tate of homeschooling very disappointing here. Because at some point, someone says homeschooling in this interview, and Andrew Tate says, well, that's pushing the problem away, or that's not serious. He just dismisses it and doesn't indicate why. Homeschooling is a very good tool here to protect your children against such propaganda. Now, perhaps he was dismissing it because he thinks it's unrealistic for low-income parents, but I don't think it's unrealistic. If you live a simple lifestyle, it is entirely possible if you find a way to pay for your home relatively quick. If you're not slave to the system in terms of always paying mortgage, always being in the system of dependence, you can find a way to live a very decent life of simplicity, of low cost, and you can spend most of your life just training and educating your children. So I think it was dismissed way too easily in this interview. Skatie says, because the social environment of the public school is a whole other thing. You may equip your child with all sorts of ways of resisting the ideological temptation, but you're not going to deprogram their emotional, social reactions, which is that people converge toward thinking what's around them. And since they will spend 8 hours a day with other kids, with other adults, they will sponge this into a bad influence. Skatie says, correct, JF, the daily conditioning can overwhelm rationality because the capitulation response is based on the lack of rational decisions to exit the circumstance. Therein is where a child learns to obey the incorrect social majority. Absolutely. John Drake says, JF just said it, how do you counter 8 hours of daily programming? So that being said, you know, it's a small point of disagreement with Andrew Tate, but the symptoms that he lists, the solutions he's talking about are really putting people on the right path. I think it's a very good start.
Yeah. Ready? Correct. Now I'm in school.
Correct.
Hey, Miss Jones says, hey, Patrick, so tell me, so what did you think about this as this, you have to write this paper? Well, let me tell you, last night I was having a conversation with my dad, and my dad told me, why do you want me to believe that? Then comes the phone call, and then now you're cornered as a parent, and now what do you say to the school? Say I'm the school, role play.
Correct, and this is, and I can't role play it by myself.
That's
it's
what
difficult.
I'm saying.
It's difficult, and this is the exact point why you need a clan, you need a network, you need other parents. If I was a parent and my child was going to public school, I'd be extremely interested in finding other parents whose kids were going to that public school. Yeah, you have the PTA meetings, et cetera, but there has to be a degree of strength in numbers. It's hard. You can say homeschooling, that's the cop-out. But the other...
It's not a cop-out. See, that's how he dismisses it. I don't think he's thought it through. Homeschooling is possible at very low incomes, depending on your life situation. If you're set in terms of having your house, you need really a small amount of food to survive on the everyday.
The other answer, the more arrogant answer to this, is actually an answer I gave after the subway incident. You know, in New York with the subway where they choked the guy and he died.
Yep.
I get asked all the time, Andrew, what would you have done in that scenario? It's a very difficult scenario. I mean, we can argue whether he choked him too long, whether he was trying to protect people. There's a bunch of arguments. But it's very unfortunate. This goes back to what I was saying earlier. You can no longer just be the average man, the average citizen. I insulate myself from so many problems with money. I know.
So Harry recognizes that him having money saves him a lot of trouble. He doesn't have to face the psychiatric case in the morning because he takes the metro. So he's in a very good situation from that perspective. I would say in conclusion on Andrew Tate, very good interview. I loved it. I think his solution for society is to restore honor. I don't think it suffices. I don't think a psychological solution of that sort is enough. And I think he doesn't talk about how we must restore for honor to come back, for family honor to come back. We must fix the marriage contract. And he's kind of surfing on the side of this issue, but I wish he addressed it much more clearly. In a society where there cannot be a marriage contract, we cannot have long-term commitments of fathers to raising good children because they're not let to do this. I know that it's less of a problem within the Muslim religion because they have their own outlook on loyalty in the marriage, but you won't fix this problem outside of the Muslim religion if you don't fix the marriage contract. And the fact is, if the business world was not allowed to make contracts, they would immediately crash. Well, we have to have the same thing for the family. If the family signs a contract that says, you are my wife, I'm your husband, there has to be a guarantee that comes with it, in the same way that if two companies sign a contract, they have to be committed toward one another to the point where a judge will hold them to these commitments. If there's no commitment, then there is, unfortunately, a direction, an evolutionary direction for society in which males, their strategy is prey and prey. That is the optimal strategy of a male in a society where they're not given access to their children. So as long as we don't fix this problem of fatherly contribution to children in a context where women are breaking families at a rate of 75% being the divorce initiator, where we don't have a solution for this. And the whole idea of religion being a solution, it works if you can make a religion dominate in the way the Muslim religion has been successful in Muslim countries. But I don't know that we can reproduce this and preserve Western civilization as it exists. Like I don't know that we can just say, let the Muslims breed until they outbreed us and it will fix itself. It will have fixed itself, but at the loss of our own existence. Linux Foo says, I know what you're saying, JF, but the image is funny. Spray jizz everywhere. Well, yeah, it is. It is, unfortunately, what it is, the evolutionary equilibrium in which you're stuck. If you're a male and they won't let you, or they won't let your money, because of inheritance tax, they won't let your money reach your children. Like that's what the leftists want. They want your money to be unable to influence your child's life. They don't even want you to be able to make their life better. They want everyone to be equal and everyone to be low. That is the problem of leftism. They're doing it at the cultural level by taking fathers away from family, and they're doing it at the financial level with inheritance tax. John Drake says, got to get away from the power centers and build parallel societies that sidestep bad law as much as possible. Muslims pretty much ignore laws they don't agree with. Yeah, exactly. We have to inspire ourselves, at least partly, from this model. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. You also have two alternative ways to contribute to the show: corntree.jfg.world or Entropy. The two links are in the first line of the description below. Blanket says, JF, is there a way to fix this problem the world is having now? Well, is there a way? Yes. Fix marriage, fix the reliance on public, on big government, and fix demographics, and you've pretty much fixed 95% of the problems of Western civilization. So if we could just have this, that would be easy, but we can't have this because we're in a culture war, and we won't be able to have this until we go through the intergenerational struggle. Because you have to let the people who are self-punishing with their bad cultural ideas, they have to fully self-punish. They have to make less babies, and you have to wait for the next generation that has less of their babies to even make a gain, to gain grounds. So there is a way to fix that would be easy if you give me all powers in the world, but it's very long and very painful because I don't have all powers in the world, and we're stuck with an enemy, basically. John Drake says, yes, any people that want to preserve their way of life do this. It's a winning strategy. Absolutely, which is why I always take, I'm always surprised that so many people are against my saying that we should flee. We should flee. You're not going to lead the fight against LGBT propaganda in San Francisco and restore San Francisco. Like, why would you want to do this? Drive 5 hours in any direction and you have an easier community to build there. So I really don't get it. When I say flee the big city, flee those leftist places, and people are like, oh yeah, JF is such a French loser. It's like, okay, well, good luck. Good luck restoring social conservatism in San Francisco. You have my full ideological support, but I won't be sending money your way because I don't think your project is viable. Jordan Peterson on YouTube Shorts.
Emptiness in your life isn't because you don't have enough rights. You have all the rights there are. You have more than you should. And isn't because you lack consumerist options. You have Amazon and pornography, man.
I have Amazon and pornography.
You can get whatever you want whenever you want it. And if that's still not working, well, what are you missing? Well, maybe you're missing the opposite of that. A little bit of restraint.
A little bit of sacrifice, a little bit of restraint. See, much of Jordan Peterson's contribution to the world is around this theme of restraint and fatherly restraint and boundaries. And it makes me think about the interview with Andrew Tate, and I can't help but feel that I'm kind of part of a different type of humanity, because I don't feel that restraint and is that much of the critical role of the father. But, I mean, clearly these people have benefited from great parenting, and part of the parenting they've benefited from was this whole constraint and punishment and micromanagement. Fox has slapped Tucker Carlson with a cease and desist notice over his Twitter show. Fox News has sent a cease and desist letter to Tucker Carlson after the former Fox host racked up a combined 169 million combined views in his first two episodes of his show on Twitter after parting ways in April following the network's historic settlement with Dominion Voting System. Fox notably refused to let Carlson out of his contract, in which they have exclusive rights to his content through December 31st, 2024. I think that a big showdown is about to happen here. This is so important, and it's a triangle of different interests. Because the question is, if there's a conflict between contractual law and the First Amendment, who wins? Because can you sell your speech? Can you sell your voice? Can you truly consent to being shut down for years? That is the ultimate question that I don't know what's going to happen, but ultimately we have here a Twitter rising as a video platform, even if really Twitter video hasn't changed much since the takeover of Elon. They made little improvements here and there. But we have here the impression that Elon is going super strong on this. He wants to beat YouTube. He wants to be the next place for video. And that I'm so enthusiastic about, because my clips have been doing awesome there. So much more viewers than anything I would get on YouTube. So I'm super happy. And I hope that I'll be able to place myself in a very special place of news broadcasting. I will continue to regularly publish clips. In fact, it might become kind of a main platform, other than the fact that it's really not a platform for live yet. But what's also important here is the question, is this an honest thing that Fox News pulled on Tucker? Basically, you could say, well, contractually, Tucker has committed, I'm selling my speech to you. I'm selling my talent to you, and you will employ me as a news analyst, and you will pay me millions of dollars every year for it. I think that a first-degree interpretation of this contract would pass in the court, in the sense that I think a court would say, well, you know, you have a First Amendment right, but that First Amendment right includes selling your exclusivity. And once you sell your exclusivity, you've practiced your First Amendment right. You've practiced the right to sell your speech, and you sold it to Fox News. That being said, I don't think it means that there's no hope for Tucker here, because there are some serious arguments tending on the other side of this issue. The first being, is Fox News in violation of their own contractual obligations against Tucker? So here's an example. If Fox News was dishonest in making these deals, and if Fox News ultimately has something to hide in the closet as to what is the true motivation why they're not putting Tucker on TV anymore, if Tucker Carlson can have something in discovery or something that he can show in court that suggests that Fox News is engaging here in a kind of anti-competitive practice of some kind, that they have dishonestly bought Tucker Carlson's speech, but with the ultimate intent of silencing him. If there's some kind of deal that ties Fox News to try and want to silence Tucker Carlson, then it could go totally the other way. And one could make the argument, this contract is not valid because there was a hidden purpose for one of the parties that was fraudulently hidden to Tucker. For example, I think that it would be an anti-competitive practice if I go see your business, and let's say you're a cow farmer, and I say, wow, I'm really interested in the in this technology that you've developed for milking the cows, and I would like to buy the idea from you. And then I take the idea and I burn it, or I do something that I didn't tell you I would with it, and I've in fact misled you into making this anti-competitive decision and participating to an anti-competitive practice. That would be fraud under certain circumstances. So I think that Tucker may very well be able to lift an argument of this kind. And a second branch of arguments that will potentially matter in court is we're talking about commercial speech versus versus private speech. Like Tucker is really saying, hey, those are my views. Those are my political views. I'm expressing them on Twitter. This is not comparable. Even if, but when you listen to Twitter, it's when you listen to Tucker on Twitter, it's basically a show. It's a written monologue style of show that he would have done on Fox News. So it is the same thing by appearance. But deeply, he might make the argument, this is just political speech. You cannot abandon one of your rights by contract, one of your fundamental rights like political speech. And there are certain rights like this that you can't abandon. You can't abandon your right to proper medical treatment. Like, you cannot sign something with an employer that says, oh, and you know what? If I have cancer in the future, I'm not going to benefit for, I'm not going to seek any form of remedy to my cancer. That is not doable because you would be abandoning a right that is ultimately fully yours, and therefore the contract that would do this would be totally invalid. So perhaps Tucker will succeed at making the case that the First Amendment right to political speech is so fundamental that it's basically like a medical right. It's something you cannot contractually abandon. And even if you sign a contract that says, I abandon it, you still have it. All of these things are entirely possible outcome of this whole conflict. I think it will be an epic thing, this fight between Tucker and Fox News. And it's at the triangle between personal speech, commercial speech, and anti-competitive practice. Very complex areas of law, which have never really played out in this way. We will have a three-way here being balanced by whatever justice system processes this. And in any case, it's all good for Twitter business. It's all good for the Elon Musk plan. It's going to attract people to a new growing platform, which we've not had for a long time. The YouTube monopoly on video, basically, oligopoly, has been crushing the internet. I'm super happy that something new is about to happen. And in fact, I'll be on Richard Spencer's show, on his Substack show, tomorrow to talk exactly about this, the fundamental Elon change and what's happening with Twitter video. What else do we have? Senator Chuck Grassley says that the FD 1023 form says that the foreign national who bribed Joe and Hunter Biden allegedly has 17 audio recordings of his conversations with them that were kept as insurance policy. So it seems that details are emerging indicating that there is some information out there, perhaps that is not even available at this time to the U.S. side, but that the person in Ukraine who would have been involved in this whole bribery by Joe Biden would have the goods, would have the receipts. I want to hear those recordings. I'd be very interested at hearing those 17 recordings. Richard Spencer was asking yesterday on Twitter, the question really is Elon too big to fail? Remember that Elizabeth Holmes was connected to every dignified elder statesman you could think of, and she's in jail now. Elon is friends with David Sacks and Ron DeSantis. You do the math. Yeah, it's a very important question. Is Elon so big that he can't be canceled? Because I think eventually the chicken will come to roost. And I think they haven't fully come yet. Elon has been targeted by hit pieces and attacks. But I don't think they pulled everything they could pull on him yet. Elon is subject to many weaknesses, many holes in his armor. He is way too enmeshed with too many businesses and too many businesses that are highly regulated. And at the same time, you know, having SpaceX and Tesla, and yet being in a super unregulated environment of speech with Twitter, that is a very explosive combo. Very hard to maintain equilibrium in those circumstances, because they once they really hate him for this unregulated speech aspect, they can get at him through making Tesla basically, they could bankrupt Tesla tomorrow morning if they wanted. If someone really hated Elon Musk, they could bankrupt Tesla with a handful of, you know, grants to other automakers for electric vehicle, not giving those grants to Tesla, making some laws against self-driving and taking whatever unique technology is in the Tesla and outlawing it. It is an important question. Linux Foo says he's a crypto trillionaire. He doesn't care. I'm not sure if he's a crypto trillionaire. He seems to have been very shyly joining the Bitcoin world back a couple of years ago. Not sure that he's fully in. And not sure that would matter, because they could attack crypto too. Anyways, I'll be discussing all of this with Richard Spencer tomorrow in the afternoon, Tuesday tomorrow. Dylan Mulvaney, this is where it becomes really sad.
I live for the gays. I live for the gays. I live for them. I live for the gays. The gays, the gays, the gays. The guys, the gays, the gays make me happy. I don't wanna live for anyone else. Gay, 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 BB gay, yeah, 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 whoa, whoa, whoa.
This is where, you know, under a certain angle, these people they try to make themselves look under a certain angle, and you have to develop so much effort. Like, look at the deprivation of food that she has to go through just so she's as thin as a female. And even that doesn't work. It's like, I can still see the body shape here. This is larger shoulder than hips. And those are the features of a male. I can see that, oh, Dylan Mulvaney has all sorts of tricks to try to make it look less. Like here, the withdrawal of the shoulders to make them look smaller. But they're still larger. They're still larger than your hips. And you're overdriven, like what you feel are feminine behavior. They are so above the top that at this point it makes the whole thing pathetic.
It's the case, the case, the guys! The gays make me happy. I don't wanna live.
The thing is, even a female trying to pull this would kind of look dishonorable in many ways. But you are trying to pull this as a trans woman. That doesn't work.
For anyone else, gay, 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 BB gay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the point of great sadness, this moment right here. You can see the despair in her forehead. You can see the trying more than is possible by the physical universe. Do you see the kind of, oh yeah, I'm trying super hard, but by trying hard, it makes me more look more masculine. Oh shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Marilyn Dem gravels after saying Muslim kids against LGBTQ plus lessons are aligned with white supremacists. The Montgomery County Democrat said, my remarks were focused on promoting inclusion. You have this whole showdown happening in Maryland between Muslims and the LGBTQ plus propaganda lovers. I love it. I love it because this is where I can sit back and enjoy life finally. It's like, I used to have to lead this fight against the left and invest so much effort in it. And I would get all the it pieces written about me and they would try to ruin my life. I can let the Muslims do this one. And it's like, okay, let's see where this turns out. I consider myself fully an ally of the Muslims, and I appreciate the Muslim diversity here as it leads to its inevitable effects. Chuck Garrity says it's very satisfying watching them battle it out. Absolutely. Shamrock says, Jeff, are there health effects to long-term hormone therapy? I mean, those we already know, there are plenty of health effects. First, it's around sterilization, and they will keep telling you, oh, well, it's reversible. And it's like, no, maybe if you're lucky, maybe if you don't do it too long. But there's a way puberty blockers totally make you sterile, definitely. And then we're talking bone growth issues. They induce osteoporosis of the kind you would normally get at 70 years old. They induce this now in children and in young adults because, as it turns out, you debalance the estrogen system of hormones, you get osteoporosis. That's just how it is. So yes, definitely, there are already known side effects. And my position would be, we don't know... We don't know the worst. The worst is as yet to come. You know, was it Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend who was saying, the best as yet to come? The best as yet to come. I don't think we have a full insight because I don't think we have enough of a big population followed over... Because it's easy to make a little study in the 80s and with six people and, oh, they turn out not so bad. But do this on 10,000 people the way they did it with the vaccine. Like when you expand, when you're broader in your use of the drug, you end up finding that genetic diversity also means a diversity of responses to your interventions. Conor McGregor went too hard on a mascot, apparently. I don't know if it's part of the skit or if Conor McGregor truly went too hard and truly hurt the mascot. But it's hilarious. Let me lower the sound a little bit. Let's look at the hit again. Yeah, and so the mascot was actually transported to the hospital, if you believe the official statements. But I'm wondering, is it part of the skit that they're saying they got transported to the hospital? Maybe they actually sent them to the hospital, but they weren't truly hurt. I don't know, because it could all be a skit, or it could be that Conor McGregor once again, is going just a little too far, you know? And yes, Silver Spider, I agree with this. My impression is that he hit the hat, So it's like, even if he had hit very strong, it seems that the head of the mascot would be totally safe. Now, they said we sent him to the hospital, and basically they said he was okay. So have you sent the guy to the hospital out of precautions, or was there truly a feeling in him that he got hit too hard? I have no clue. I disagree with this. I think it's Kanye West is making this this whole sushi party with a black naked woman on which the sushi is served with these bizarre candles. It makes the whole thing look pretty satanic. I don't like this conception. I don't like the idea that a human being is degraded as a display for food. I personally don't like it. Let's play it to see how it looks like. And see, there he is, just dancing and happy. And the sushi are on the woman. There's not many people at this party. And it's not a way to honor cuisine, you know. Good cuisine should be sufficient in and of itself. It doesn't need boobs. I don't like the idea. I think that Kanye shouldn't do that kind of stuff, and it's a waste of money also. But I noticed that Kanye is hiring a lot of black people. There was a black chef. There was a black sushi woman. That's more black people involved in the sushi business than I've ever seen in my life. Aquanote says, this sort of using naked woman as a platter for food is a common thing in uber wealthy Japanese bars. Yeah, and I'm also against the practice, but I would be a little more interested about the Japanese version of this. 12 Philly cops fired for social media post can sue the city appeals court, according to an appeals court. So this is a case of Philadelphia cops who were revealed by, you know, when the left started going after white extremism and they started trying to document a lot of cases of people, oh, you worked there and you posted this on your Facebook and you're a white supremacist. So they did that to policemen a lot. They also did this in the military, if you remember, years ago. And this is the case of 200 officers that were disciplined, and 15 of them were fired for Facebook posts, basically. And I think it's a total violation of the First Amendment. Doesn't matter what your conception of racist statements are. They are legal in the U.S. They are the most protected right in the U.S. It's an amendment that precedes the one that allows the police to carry their gun, by the way. So I think it's a good idea that they pursued this, because I think they are totally right by legal standard. You cannot fire someone unless he has attached somehow his statements to your organization, made you look bad, but you cannot fire someone for private political beliefs expressed on Facebook. That shouldn't be the case. People are speculating that Elon Musk might buy the Who. Forget it. It's not happening. Elon Musk, can you buy the Who from Bill Gates and make it about health? And Elon Musk says, how much does it cost? And that's exactly what Elon Musk had said about Twitter in 2017. How much is it? So you can always dream that Elon Musk, after fixing free speech, will want to fix vaccine authoritarianism, but I don't think it's going to happen. Justin, well, that was Justin this afternoon. U.S. congressman officially files a bill to fire SEC chair Gary Gensler. I do agree that he should get fired for his attack on crypto, but it's not going to happen. There's way too much support for this guy, so I think it's useless to be filing this. He's going to be supported by the mainstream politicians who do want to crash crypto. DK Shadow says, spoiler, Elon Musk could afford it because he's actually Satoshi. No, I don't think so. There's a guy that's claiming to be Satoshi still. I saw his post today. I mean, it's a guy who's been claiming this for a while. But I saw his post on my Twitter feed today. I don't remember his name, but I won't believe anyone is Satoshi until I see Bitcoin movements in the original wallets. Republican senators introduce End the Endless Wars Act. A group of Republican senators at the end of last week introduced a bill to repeal the 2001 authorization for the use of the military force that was passed in the wake of September 11th attack. That was used horribly. Like, this was used to justify all sorts of wars except anything that truly relates to the 11th September attack. Unbelievable. But I agree that we should, of course, remove this authorization. But again, not gonna happen. The Congress is bought by military interest, and it's going to keep going. Lendalt Guntram says, proving being Satoshi is rather easy. Exactly. Move some of the first BTCs. Exactly. And, you know, Satoshi believed strong enough in BTC. I don't imagine him being careless and being like, oh yeah, I don't care about the 50,000 first BTC because it's worth 5 cents right now. You can clearly see that the guy was a visionary in his writing and that he was seeing this as like the ultimate counter Fed and the ultimate counter regular financial system. So a guy like this wouldn't be loose with his early keys. I don't see it that way. DK Shadow says he doesn't even have to move one sat. He just has to sign a message with his key. Exactly. How it started, how it's going. I don't know about this game, but apparently there's a game. What is that game? I don't know. But they turned this hero into this hero. And this is the point at which your gender-neutral characters are basically confusing. It's like, what are we talking about here? Is this a male with boobs? Or is this a female with an androgynous look? Fable, apparently, is the name of the game, people are saying. This is fucking ugly. And it's like, what are we talking about here? Are these boobs, or is this more like a chainmail that happens to give some volume at this place? I don't know, bro. But it looks like bad graphism, but it's actually intended to be as such. But you reach the point where your leftist pressure onto game making is depriving you of a quality looking graphics because you've just chosen ugliness as your character representation. We have more propaganda happening in the school, but in this school apparently students were resisting by mocking the propaganda, but they were told to shut up by the teacher. Poor children, they are forced to watch homosexual kissing, flags. It's like, oh no, give us something else, teacher.
Wow, Miss Clark. Wow. Why are you showing this to kids?
Why are you showing this to kids? At this point, it's the kids telling the teacher. Why are you showing this to us?
Hey, I'll warn you guys now. If you're going to be inappropriate, I will have supervision down and give all of you a Saturday school for next year. So knock it off.
Okay.
She will punish them with a Saturday school. They must eat the state propaganda. Absolutely. Insider paper says breaking, that was earlier, that was this morning or yesterday, JP Morgan Chase reaches tentative settlement with sexual abuse victims of Jeffrey Epstein after weeks of embarrassing disclosures about the bank's longstanding relationship with him. That to me is unfair, okay? Because people hate Jeffrey Epstein so much that they would want anyone to pay for his crimes, okay? But JP Morgan wasn't involved in those crimes at all. So what they did is, okay, well, Jeffrey Epstein is dead. We're going to sue someone who has a lot of money, JP Morgan, and we're going to release slowly to the media our case against them. And this will tarnish the JP Morgan relationship. It will annoy them so much. At some point, they're just going to say, all right, I'm going to give you a couple of millions to make this problem go away. So this is what happened here. But it's like, you've been the victim maybe of rape by Jeffrey Epstein, maybe of human trafficking by Jeffrey Epstein. His bank is very remotely related to this. Callum Oxworth says, you're just saying that because you're on the hook to JF. Not at all. I am absolutely not influenced by the fact that I had a relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. It really doesn't bother me. And in fact, if anything, I am very much against the JP Morgan Chase of this world. So if any bias I would be bringing to this, it would be a negative bias against JP Morgan. But truly, I believe it should not be the responsibility of I think it's a very dangerous direction of society that we're taking, where people who feel harm can claim this harm from pretty much anyone. You know how the Sandy Hook parents got a judgment against Alex Jones? Well, Alex Jones didn't make the shooting. Alex Jones talked about the shooting. Alex Jones practiced his First Amendment speech rights about the shooting. And here we have, well, JP Morgan didn't choose that Jeffrey Epstein would be a rapist or a human trafficker. They, as far as I can tell from the revelations, it's not like they knew to the extent of being involved in the crime. What we have is basically they were pulling evidence that perhaps this guy at JP Morgan, the big guy there, perhaps he's been told many times that Jeffrey Epstein may have been involved in some dark doings. But that's the thing is, that's not enough. People tried to pull the same thing against Nick Fuentes. Oh, you knew that Ali was gay and they told you he was a groomer, so you have to treat him like a groomer. People don't realize just how what society we would build if you force everyone to behave on rumors and allegations. Like, what do you want JP Morgan to do? Debank Jeffrey Epstein because they heard that maybe he's a rapist? You have to have the law and you have to have the presumption of innocence before a legal case is initiated. And all of these things are basically suggesting and pressuring public people to dissociate from people based on rumors only, based on no due process. And so it's a way that the leftist is going after the system by trying to impose a kind of lower version of due process into the real world so that people can be punished financially and culturally without ever being found guilty of anything. I stand against this, and I stand in solidarity on this particular issue with JP Morgan Chase, out of all the people. But so you see, they choose to get rid of the problem because they choose to do a settlement because, and they're right, you know, they're just going to go through too much trouble and they're probably going to lose in the America of today. So they have no interest in continuing the legal case. They would get punished for it. And on top of it, there would be all sorts of bad coverage in the media that would make it even more costly. Amazon accuses customer of racism and shuts down their smart home. I will not play the clip, but this guy tells the story of... So there's a guy who has all of his smart home connected to Amazon. And as it turns out, he's also ordering from Amazon. So the Amazon driver comes in, delivers a package, and the house is so smart that there's actually an automated message to say something like, thank you, we are not currently here, but it says kind of thank you for coming to the driver, or a little word like this. It's an automated message, but the driver interprets it somehow as a racist message. Somehow he heard the N-word in the or something of that kind. He heard something that he found racially objectionable in this little thank you, we're not here kind of note. So he reports on his Amazon. I mean, at this point, it's like Amazon AI just reacting. He reports on his Amazon little keyboard, I've just been insulted racially by this smart house. And Amazon decides, oh, well, this is the house of a racist. We're going to shut down his smart service. So they shut down his light controls and his door control and his ring bell control. They ended up restoring it because this was all apparently a misunderstanding. But I can't believe this. Amazon driver gets racially insulted, but he kind of misinterprets a ring door controlled by Amazon automated systems or whatever they call it, Amazon Home, something like this, or Alexa, you see. And it leads the Amazon company to shut down the Amazon network for this guy. Well, what a brave new world we are headed for. This will be it for tonight, boys. If you'd like to support the show on a regular basis, join the Patreon, the Subscribestar. We need your support to keep going. We have great days ahead with Twitter clips. In fact, today, I think I've recorded 2 clips out of what I did tonight, and they will be published during the night on Twitter. That is it for tonight. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.